Om Gyanati Manandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksus Meditanjena Tasmai Sri Yudhavena Maha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamahim Bhutati Sahanandika Manas Kapitu Vrishcha Kribasanya Vrishvacha Pratitanam Pamanevyo Vaisthamibhyo Namaha 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 Continuing with the prayers of the Nagapadnis.
In the Bhagavatam,
even in the 10th canto, there is always mention of Krishna's divine position, because there's such a tendency when we hear about him just moving around the cow pastures of Vrindavan, engaging in his Naralila, his human-like activities, there is such a tendency to think, to not perceive the extraordinariness of his activities. But everything Krishna does is completely extraordinary. Why? Krishna walks around the land of Vrindavan without his shoes. What is extraordinary with that? About that? But just the fact that Krishna is doing it, it infuses every activity full of the most wondrous experience, because everything Krishna does is perfectly done. It is full of ecstasy because Krishna himself is made out of Satchit Ananda, eternity bliss and knowledge, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, and he's Anadi Adi Govinda. Govinda, he is the reservoir of all pleasure. And he is the ultimate cause of all causes. And in the prayers of the Nagapatnis, they have seen, as have the residents of Vrindavan, they have seen Krishna enwrapped in the coils of the snake for 48 minutes, one muhurta of time. And then when Krishna decided that the residents of Vrindavan, his timing was very unique, he decided now it's time to shift the Leela from him being from Karuna Rasa, bringing out the compassion in everyone's heart, and the fear and the anxiety due to their belovedness of feelings towards Krishna. And then Krishna began to show just a small amount of his Aishwarya, his divine opulence, because Krishna has unlimited power. Unlimited power. So here, he begins to expand himself. And Kaliya, powerful as he is, cannot hold Krishna within his grasp. What to speak of crushing Krishna? He cannot hold Krishna. Sanatana Goswami had previously explained that ultimately Krishna stayed within the grasp of Kaliya for so long, for 48 minutes, because it is not proper when someone is giving you a loving embrace to break free from that embrace quickly. So this is the incredible vision of Sanatana Goswami. But after Krishna defeated Kaliya, and Kaliya understood Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he surrendered to him, he was almost dead. Then the wives of Kaliya, the Nagapatnis, they began to offer prayers. And the first six verses, which we haven't completed, up to text 38, they describe their agreement with the punishment that Krishna has given Kaliya. Because everything that Krishna does is perfect. and is completely just. He defines what is correct and what is incorrect. And when Krishna acts, it is for everyone's benefit. So the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kali, are expressing this. And in the 37th and 38th text, they're going, continuing, expressing their appreciation for what Krishna has done in benedicting Kaliya. We'll go through the verses quickly, the 33rd verse. Yes, it is proper, they say, for you have to chastise Kaliya because you've come to this world specifically. Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya cha duskritam, to chastise the miscreants. And Kaliya, so full of envy, was certainly a miscreant. So it is proper that you have chastised him. And he is so envious, in the 34th verse they describe, this punishment that you've given him is for the purpose of driving away his contamination. What is the contamination? Everything based on ahankar, false ego, a false sense of self. Other than being Krishna's servant, jivera sarupoi Krishna nityadas, any experience that we have of ourself that is separate from being Krishna's servant is a contamination, an overlay over our real consciousness. Because this is actually who we are. So Kaliya was so overlaid with enmity and envy towards who? Towards every living entity. So this chastisement by Krishna is, Kaliya used his full power, which was quite formidable. But yet Krishna kept on kicking him and kicking him and kicking him until Kaliya understood. He became diminished in all his power, so he understood, I'm about to die. This person is millions of times more powerful than Garuda, who I fear. He must be the master of Garuda. He must be the Lord. So therefore he surrendered. So that kicking till death, it was the most fortunate thing, the wives are saying, because it has removed the contamination. And practically speaking, this is the situation of every conditioned soul. We go through life and we get kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked by the material energy. This is the business. Dukalayam shashvatam. This is the business of the material energy in this world, is to give us trouble. We have our plans, and at each step there is an obstacle to our plan. We try to remove that obstacle so we can finally enjoy as we desire, and five more obstacles appear. We remove one of those five and suddenly there's another five. So that's how many are we up to? 15. So one by one we're pushing and trying to push things further away and pull things closer. And more obstacles until the moment of death. And materialistic persons are so adamant in their enmity towards Krishna and so conceited and proud that they don't come to the conclusion that Kaliya comes to, unless they are jananam punya karmanam, unless they are pious souls, they don't surrender to Krishna and say, I've had enough, please, I am under your care. Go to Tain Varanam Tata. So this is mercy, because this envious serpent has assumed the form of a serpent, the body of a serpent, due to his envy, his sinful reactions, and you've purified him. And what, in text 35, they say, what could he have possibly have done in his previous lives to get for him the fortune? What austerities, religious acts has he done to give him the fortune of being touched by your lotus feet, that you are so pleased with him that you have done this to him? How? We don't know how he has got this great opportunity. because if one attains the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, now we're up to text 37 and 36. Kasyanu bhava syana deva vidnahi tavangi renu. To attain this is not easy. Lakshmi Devi, yad vanchiyat sri lalanacharat tapo vahaya kamam suchiram. For a long time, she performed austerities and could not attain what this snake has attained with his enviousness. And he's attained something. What is the cause of that good fortune? We cannot ascertain it. And then, in the 37th verse, Nanaka Prishtam Nachasava Bomam Na Parameshtam Na Rasa Dipatyam Na Yoga Siddhi Apunarbhavam Va Vanchanti Yat Parareja Papanam. This is very similar to one of the prayers of Vritrasura, who says the same thing, that there is nothing of value. Those who have attained the dust of your lotus feet, they say, never hanker for the kingship of heaven, limitless sovereignty. This is the desires of everyone in this world. They want to rule in a heavenly way. They want limitless sovereignty to control and to have subjugated everyone. The position of Brahma, these are higher and higher desires for controlling and enjoying, or rulership over the earth. But those who have attained the dust of your lotus feet never hanker for the kingship of heaven. Limitless sovereignty, the position of Brahma, or rulership over the earth. They are not interested even in the perfection of yoga or liberation itself. Just, this is a way of describing what the potency and sweetness of the dust of the lotus feet, having attained the dust of the lotus feet. And therefore, Mahaprabhu says the same thing in which of his Shikhastak verses? Huh? Najanam, najanam, nasundarim, kavitam va, jagadisa kamani, mama janamani, janamani shade, babatad bhaktiya. All I want is Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram petitam mam vishame bhavambuddha kripaya tava parapanka jastita duli. This is what I want. I don't want this. I don't want to attain anything in the material world. What I want is to be situated as a particle of dust at your lotus feet, because wherever one goes, that is one thing that one takes with him. The dust particles on one's feet. So Krishna also does this. So this is the prayer of Mahaprabhu. Let me stay with you always as your servant, as a dust particle, insignificant. Insignificant. So nothing is valuable for one who has attained the dust of your lotus feet. They have no other hankerings. They only want that. So read some of the comments of the Acharyas on this 37th verse. Srila Swami says, because they have attained the dust of your feet, they consider even the highest position of Brahma to be insignificant. So what a taste, what a flavor is there at the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. And it is so sweet. The most astounding thing is it's so sweet that Krishna himself wants to taste it. And therefore, the sage Markandeya Rishi sees him at the time of devastation, floating upon a banyan leaf, sucking his own toe like babies are trying to do. So he's even anxious. Krishna himself is anxious to taste the sweetness of his lotus feet. And our acharyas have commented in Prabhupada, includes it in a purport, that this hints at the incarnation of Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu is desiring this. What is it like? Is Krishna in the mood of a devotee? What is it like to be a devotee of me? This is the one thing he cannot understand. What is it like to be a devotee. He hankers after that mood, that loving service mood. We in the material world, conditioned souls, we're hankering for all practical purposes to be more and more powerful so we can enjoy more. Ishwaraham aham bhogi, siddham balavan sukhi, power to be in a greatly powerful position of enjoyment. No one's hankering to be a servant except for Krishna. This is the hankering of Krishna, to serve. And this is bhakta vatsalya. This is the quality of Krishna that is all attractive. He has the character that he loves. His enjoyment is serving and pleasing his devotees. So kamvada elam sharanam rajema. Who can serve a more wonderful master than Krishna? Madhvacharya says, it is the understanding of those who are actually expert in the Vedas that getting the association of Lord Hari is superior to mere liberation, and even on that platform, the privilege of coming into direct contact with him is superior. This is a quotation from the Padma Purana that Madhvacharya brings. So all these are hinting, if to be kicked by Krishna's lotus feet is so fortunate, what to speak of being an intimate associate of his, as are the residents of Vrindavan. So everything is really ultimately glorifying the residents of Vrindavan. So Sanatana Goswami says, ah, what to speak of the special glories of coming in contact with many of the particles of dust of your divine feet. Even the glories of somehow receiving the shelter of even one of such particles is indescribable. How glorious it is. As they state in the verse beginning, Na, the Nagapatni state this with Nanaka Preshtam. Simply by thus attaining the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sanatana Goswami continues, whose personal form is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, it is natural that all these desires are dispelled. So therefore, Mahaprabhu chants in the second Chikastapa, Dudaiva Midbrisam Nihana Najanu Raga. Unfortunate as I am, I have no taste for these things. And why? Especially due to aparad. Who said that? Yes. Yes. But especially due to aparad. But also other anartas, taste for the temporary, lack of knowledge, tattva vibhrama, and vidya dhulabham, weakness of heart. This removes our ability to taste, which is most wonderful. So Sanatana Goswami says, it is natural that all these desires are dispelled, since in comparison to it, heaven and so forth are most insignificant. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, if the Lord questions, what is the practical fruit to be gotten by these particles of dust of my feet? They're glorifying the dust of... So what is the benefit of getting those dust, if the Lord asks that, which are supposed to be so glorious? And they reply, you should not speak like this. The dust of your feet is itself the fruit. In other words, what do you get after you get the dust of his feet? Just like when you work and you get money, the purpose of getting money is to get something for that money. Well, what is the purpose behind getting the dust of the Lord's feet? And they replies, you shouldn't speak like this. The dust of your feet is itself the fruit, greater than all other fruits. There is nothing beyond being a servant, not to serve to get anything, but to serve. As Prabhupada once said, the fruit of chanting Krishna's holy names is more chanting of Krishna's holy names. They state this in the verse beginning, Na, for one who has attained the dust of your lotus feet. What to speak of the surrendered desire, the surrendered desiring liberation, someone who surrendered to Krishna's lotus feet desiring liberation, which they have already achieved, they certainly do not desire heaven and so on. So comments Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So dirdaivam idrisam. What does dirdaivam mean? How unfortunate I am. How unfortunate I am. Due to my offenses, due to my taste for the temper, so many material desires, how unfortunate I am that I have no taste for that which is supremely wonderful. And later on, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the humility that a devotee has, lamenting all the anarthas that he has, it purifies his heart and causes Krishna's mercy to descend. Text 38. This is the last of their verses describing thanking Krishna for him chastising Kaliya. O Lord, although this Kaliya, the king of the serpents, has taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, kama isha, krodha isha, rajaguna samudva bhava. Desire is born out of passion, and anger, krodha, born out of ignorance. Although he's taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, he has achieved that which is difficult for others to achieve. Embodied souls who are full of desires and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benedictions manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. So this is that which is worthy of desiring and worthy of achieving. Here is the purport. It is very rare for a conditioned soul to free himself from the contamination of illusion and thus become established in perfect consciousness of the Absolute Truth. Very rare, very difficult. Maya is so powerful. It places so many desires. The mind holds on by the power of Maya, illusory energy. The mind will hold on to a desire as if that was important, a selfish, self-centered desire of the senses, as if that had some value to award happiness to the soul. This is illusion. So it is very rare that one can push away that illusion and be established in perfect consciousness of the Absolute Truth. And yet this benediction, continues, was achieved by the serpent Kaliya, because the Lord personally danced upon the serpent's hoods with his lotus feet. Although we conditioned souls may not receive the mercy of having the Lord dance on our head, we can receive the dust of the lotus feet of the Absolute through the Lord's representative, the bona fide spiritual master, and thus go back home, back to Godhead, forever freed from the misery and ignorance of the mundane universe. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, this Kaliya has achieved that, even without endeavor, that which could not be achieved by others, even by the goddess of fortune and so on. For one who is desiring which, praying, let them, the particle of dust, let me render service to the particle of dust, vibhava, desirable opulence, becomes directly manifest before his eyes. One who desires that only gets all opulence. Says Srila Swami. Srila Sanatana Goswami says, impossible, that which Kaliya has achieved is impossible to be achieved by others, even by such persons as the goddess of fortune, who are rendered service by Brahma and so on. Or else, that which is impossible to be attained by persons other than your devotees. Or else, impossible to be obtained by persons other than the residents of Vrindavan. This person, Kaliya, achieved this even though he is a great offender. Since his birth is in the mode of ignorance, and even in that context he's under the sway of anger. And even though he's the chief of the snakes, he attained that. He attained the dust of your lotus feet. And this cannot be explained by any logic, but simply in terms of your inconceivable power, according to which idea they address them as Nata, or Lord. That's one of the words of this verse. Meaning, O Lord, or in other words, are you who are capable of doing what cannot be done? O supremely independent one, who are able to do the impossible. This is the proper mood in chanting and doing devotional service. On one side, humility, thinking oneself born contaminated deeply by the modes of passion and ignorance, filled with so many inappropriate desires, and on the other hand, praying for Krishna's mercy, because he is the Nata, the Lord who is capable of doing the impossible to elevate a fallen soul such as I. The hidden implication behind the adjective he is born in darkness and so on is that this fault of his is simply part of the nature of his born species has been enjoined by you, the Supreme Lord. So what offense is there on his part, considering it is proper that you should, considering that it is proper that you should forgive him? And this idea will be manifested later on when Kaliya himself will say this, just make this point. That sarpa jati urumanyava. I am naturally angry because I'm born in a serpent family. What can I do? Unless you, if you personally release me, then I can do something. Otherwise, what hope do I have? Furthermore, by simply contacting that dust within the mind, which can gives hint of something that anyone can do, even persons full of desires who attach to the body and so on immediately achieve the fulfillment of all desires. The Nagapatnis state this in the words beginning samsara, the wheel of birth and death, which is one of the samsara chakra brahmata sharinano yad ichitasya vibhava samacha. Vishnav Chakravarti Thakur comments. We're just reading parts of the comments. By others, Lakshmi and by others means Lakshmi and others. Moreover, the dust of your lotus feet, which are the crown of all fruits, is the means of achieving the desired fruit, even of persons who are full of material desires, as they state by the words beginning samsara. And the next verse. Now thrust of their prayers shifts to offering obeisances, and there are 10 verses that offer obeisances to the Lord. And here they are going to describe this person who is this young, beautiful boy who has defeated this powerful snake of Kaliya. He's so beautiful, he's so young, he's everyone in Vrindavan can do nothing but stare at him. He's so beautiful. But yet, and he's the master, he's Natavara, the master of dancing, the best of dancers, the master of all arts. But yet, he is the all-powerful Supreme Lord, and that's what these 10 prayers are going to intimate. So, the first of the 10, 39. Namastubhyam Bhagavate Purushaya Mahatmane Bhutavasaya Bhutaya Paraya Paramatmane. We offer our obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although present in the hearts of all living beings is the Supersoul, you are all pervasive. Although the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. And although you are the cause of everything, you are transcendental to all material cause and effects, being the Supreme Soul. So listen to how they're describing Krishna, who is, again, that beautiful boy. We offer obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. although present in the hearts of all living beings, you are in every single living being's heart as the super soul. Although that, you are all pervading. You are in everyone's heart and you are everywhere. You are localized as the super soul, but you are everywhere. A contradictory qualities, and this is going to be expressed throughout these prayers, how he is the master of inconceivable potency and possessing unlimited contradictory qualities by which, and only he can possess all these qualities. All contradictions are resolved in him. Although you are the original shelter of all created material elements, because when he breathes in, the entire universe is Mahavishnu, all the universes are wound up within him. So although you are the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. You are the creator of them, and you are their shelter simultaneously. And although you are the cause of everything, everything in this world and every situation, sarva karana karanam, you are the cause. You are beyond, you are transcendental to all material causes and effects, being the Supreme Soul. So you are not entangled in the material creation. Although you are the source of it, everything is resting in you, and you are the original cause. That means that ultimately, just like if we can say, you can listen for this. No, that's not appropriate. Yes, something appropriate. The sound. So what was the cause of the sound? The cause of the sound was the dropping of the lid on the water container, metal water container, that is full of water. So that's the cause of the sound. But we can also say, well, that's not the cause of the sound. We can also say that my hand is the cause of the sound, because my hand picked up the lid and dropped it. And then we could say, well, my desire was the cause of my hand moving. And we could say, well, what was the cause of that? Well, we could say, if it wasn't for my parents, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And if it wasn't for my parents' parents, and my parents' parents' parents, and my parents' parents, and we could get the ultimate cause of everything. If we trace back anything, the ultimate cause of every effect is Govindam Adipurusham, the Supreme Lord. So that's the meaning of him being the cause of all causes. If we trace anything back, we come to Krishna as the cause. So although he's the cause, he has nothing ultimately to do with any effect or any intermediate cause. He is completely on a different level. He is transcendental. He is beyond. Even though he's acting in Vrindavan, herding the cows, just like, and calves, just like a young boy. At this time, he's already herding the cows. So he's completely out of this world, out of the material world. He's in a completely different realm. This is Krishna, all powerful, but yet, look what he's doing. Decorated when Krishna goes, before he goes to the forest, his mother decorates him with, Mother Yasoda decorates him with all kinds of jewels. And when he gets into the forest, he takes off all the jewels and puts on flower decorations, vanamala. This young boy is all powerful. And attaining this position of the residence of Vrindavan, this is the ultimate. But we have to study the first 9 cantos to understand or hear these prayers which summarize Krishna's opulence to understand who we are dealing with, who we are hearing about. So therefore, in the tenth, even in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is a continuous going back and forth to describing Leela and describing Krishna's opulences. Krishna's Leela. And then, no, don't forget. Look who you're dealing with. Look who you're hearing about. Don't think he's ordinary. So, So you are transcendental to all material causes and effects, being the Supreme Soul. And because he's extraordinary, and the most extraordinary, the supreme extraordinary, therefore he's worthy about giving ourselves to him in service, in devotional service, in loving service. So to this verse, Śrīla Śrīdhāraswāmī comments. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he who possesses transcendental qualities of inconceivable opulence that reconcile these opposing qualities. For the purpose of establishing this fact, that he has transcendental inconceivable opulences, the following 10 verses elaborate specific adjectives, specific qualities of Krishna. Sanatana Goswami, he says, elaborately describing his status of having inconceivable power, as was hinted at in the verse beginning Nata in the previous verse, they offer obeisances with devotion. In the previous verse it described that you're unlimitedly powerful, therefore you can even benedict this snake who was born in the mode of ignorance and was always angry and with the dust of your feet. So that is the hint that he's inconceivably powerful. So that's what Sanatana Goswami says. So they offer obeisances with devotion in the 10 verses beginning Nama. To Bhagavan, the ocean of inconceivable, unlimited opulence, where all incompatible things become merged with you. Thus, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, having thus discussed his mercy in 6 verses, now in 10 more verses, the wives of the Kaliya offer obeisances in devotion. They state how he is worshipped by the devotees by the word Bhagavate, meaning he who possesses 6 transcendental opulences. Pulushaya means to him who has assumed the human form. Mahatmane means to him who, even though having the form of a human, is all-pervading. He's walking through the forest with his form, his human-like 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old form, and yet he is all-pervading. That he has a form doesn't in any way disturb his being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and being unlimitedly powerful, because his form is unlimited. So this defeats these prayers defeat the impersonalist conception that because he's unlimitedly powerful and all pervading, therefore he is not. It would limit him if he had a. If you say that he has a form, that limits him, because then he can't be all-pervading. But the Vaishnavas say that if you say that he can't have a form and still be all-pervading, that is what limits him. You are not understanding his inconceivable power. Rather, you are judging his power by your finite intelligence. So they state how he is worshipped by the devotees. Purushaya means he who has assumed a human form. Mahatmani means to him who, even though having the form of a human, is all pervading. Text 40. Jnana vijnana nidaye brahmane anante shaktaye agunaya vikaraya namaste prakritaya cha. Obeisance is unto you, the Absolute Truth, who are the reservoir of all transcendental consciousness. The reservoir of all transcendental consciousness and potency, and the possessor of unlimited energies. Although completely free of material qualities and transformations, you are the prime mover of material nature. So this is Krishna as Mahavishnu. They are describing him in that way. He is the prime mover by his glance. He glances at the pradhan, and by that glance he impregnates the living entities Aham bijapada pata tasmad yoni maham brahma aham bijapada pata. In that Brahma, or that pradhan actually, is the subtlest form of material energy that contains the entirety of all in material existence, beginning with the three modes of material nature. It contains everything, but in an unvariegated form, like the primordial soup, so to speak, where nothing is manifest, everything is undifferentiated. And then Krishna glances at it with the living entities, which includes their karma in that glance. And then from that, everything begins to manifest by the power of Krishna's kala shakti, or form of time. So, how powerful is this Supreme Lord? You are the prime mover of material nature, the original mover. And not only is he the prime mover, that at every step, at every moment, his potency is required to keep the movement that the prime mover started to continue its movement. So it's not that he's the deistical conception of God is that he's like a great watchmaker who creates the pieces of the watch, then winds up the watch, and then he goes plays golf or something like that. He does something else. But that is not Krishna. He is not the creator. And that's the end of his relationship with the material world. No, he is also the maintainer. It is by his potency that everything is maintained in this. Because without his onward glance, Maya Dakshena Prakriti, Suyate Satchara Chanan, Hituna Naina Kanteya. It is by him that everything is continuously going on. Nothing has potency. Daivyesha Gunamayi is by his empowerment that this material nature goes on. So he's not just the creator of the clock and then winds it and then goes does something else at all. He is the one whose everything is resting upon him. Like pearls are strung on a thread. Although we don't see the thread or the neck beads, you can't see the thread, but yet without the thread, the tulsi beads would go everywhere. There would be no necklace. There would be no rain. Everything is resting on Krishna ultimately. Vina prakritamastada. So this is who this little boy is. Sham, the color of a rain cloud in the monsoon season full of water. This is who he is. This knowledge is so important. I remember years ago I was in Bangladesh and I was talking to some Christian Bangladeshi Christians, converted Hindus, and they, and one of them was one young man, as young men can sometimes be. He was quite arrogant, and he said, "How could you worship this Krishna who, as we always read about, who dances with others' wives in the middle of the night? How could you worship such a person?" No understanding of who God is. So this kind of knowledge of Krishna's pastimes, without understanding who God is, what is the meaning of God, who Krishna is, what his potency is, without understanding the first nine cantos, the information of the first nine cantos, then the information in the tenth cantos can cause disastrous effects. It can. To show, though, the hell God, Krishna is above everything. He controls everything. And look what he does. Where is his pleasure? Serving his devotees in Vrindavan. That is his pleasure. This shows the most wonderful characteristic of the Supreme Lord, the servant of his devotees. So So the purport here. Those who consider themselves intellectual, philosophic, or rational should carefully note here that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ocean of all knowledge and consciousness. Thus, surrendering unto the Supreme Lord does not entail giving up the method of rationally comprehending reality. Rather, one merges into the ocean of rational logic and logical comprehension. The Supreme Lord is the perfection of all sciences and all forms of knowledge, and only envious and trivial minds would deny this obvious fact. So speaks our commentator there. And Srila Sridhar Swami, or Sanatana Goswami says, to him whose very identity is Jnana, and at the same time who is an ocean of Vigyan, to him who is the absolute truth, Brahman, and at the same time possesses unlimited potencies, who because of having no material qualities is free from transformation, and at the same time is the inspirer of all material propensities. So it's so amazing. He's doing everything. Everything is resting in him, but he has nothing to do with anything of the material world. Or else, to him, although being an ocean of knowledge is the absolute, and although having unlimited potencies has no material qualities, as well as being freed from transformation. And that means that although everything in the material world is transforming, Krishna remains forever the same. And it's his energy. This is the achintya nature, what we say, achintya veda veda tattva. That everything is transforming in the material world, and the material world is not different from Krishna, but yet Krishna doesn't transform at all. He is the absolute truth, always the same. So this is a Chintya Veda Veda, actually. This is how Krishna is amazing. That's what Sanatana Goswami says. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they are speaking in terms of his being worshipable by the jnanis. So this is what the jnanis are looking for. He is like an ocean of the two opulences of jnan and vijnan. Consciousness, Srila Swami said that jnan means consciousness, and vijnan, he refers to a spiritual potency. So he's an ocean of consciousness and spiritual potencies. It all rests in him. And therefore they offer their obeisances. And again, in terms of his being worshipable by the devotees, refuting the faults having material qualities, of his refuting the fault that he has material qualities and undergoing transformation and so on, which were ascribed to him in his human form by those who are foolish. They state, the Nagapatni state, to him who has unlimited potencies, who is an ocean of inconceivable, unlimited energy, to him who is without material qualities and without material transformations of the material modes, and who is non-material, aprakrita, having no transformations of his transcendental qualities. Okay. So these are the prayers of the Nagapatni. It's quite wonderful. Thank you. Any questions or comments? If one is limited by one's intelligence, in other words, because through one's own ability, through the ascending path, all that one can conclude is that the spiritual world is non-material. And that which exists in the material world has no existence in the spiritual world. So it's a negation of the positive. It's a negation of the material world, which is basically the Brahman realization. So that's what's can be achieved through one's intelligence. But this knowledge of what goes on in the spiritual world is understood in a different way. It is understood through Shastra, and then it is realized as one advances. But did I answer? You were just making a comment.
No, I was more asking how this one is here, the pastimes and activities of the spiritual world may not be
that simplistically, that this is, how could this be true in that type of thing? Well, once it start at the beginning.
Not just to reject that, but to think kind of like, it sounds a bit simple to me.
Boring.
Yeah.
There's no hard science there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so one obviously has to make gradual progress to get to this point. We've started here at the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. We're supposed to start at the beginning and apply the intelligence to that. You asked that question too, right?
Yeah,
yeah, I remember a couple of
Mark Twain's famous quote, that heaven for the calm and help for the
fighting. For association or something, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't as hot. Yeah, but that's somewhat tangential from this point. But
I know, but my point is that sometimes it seems like that. But her point was that sometimes it seems that the spiritual world seems to be kind of simple, where everybody's kind of like goody two shoes.
You shouldn't read the next few chapters. Find out what Krishna's up to in the middle of the night. Stealing also steals butter completely, but what is the point in it is, unless one actually has the taste, has the fortune of somehow having the taste for this, for the actual spiritual realm, then it's impossible to understand the taste or the advancement. And I remember I had the experience years ago. I went to Roma. I went to the Vatican. I was in the Sistine Chapel. I went in there and it's an incredible place. There's such opulence in there. You know, they have these huge carpets from the Middle Ages and paintings and sculptures and this and that and carvings out of silver and gold. It's a huge museum. And they're all And the typical mood in there is I remember seeing one of the elaborate carpets that obviously wasn't meant to be on the floor that you walk on, but there's on the left hand corner of the whole carpet, you have to envision it up there as something. It's a huge thing. There's this great light, great effulgence, and all the people are sort of like this. And I said, yeah, that's God. You know, you can understand. That's how people look at God. And that's, the highest thing is fear of God. And therefore, and if you walk into a Catholic church or a temple or a Protestant church, or an Islamic mosque, it's a completely, all those religions born out of that area of the world, it's a completely different mood. Completely different mood from the mood of especially Gaudiya Vaishnavism, where you walk into a temple and the people are chanting and dancing and singing and there's God playing a flute. It's completely different. On one side, it's only awe and reverence. That's all that's there, and guilt, of course. But it's all awe and reverence. So it's very hard for those who have that conception built in to transcend that and actually understand what is Vrindavan. It is the most incredible thing. It is confounding to that conception. It is confounding to the material intelligence. It looks so simple. How can that be the spiritual world? But it's all composed of Satchitananda. Everything that goes on there, the land, the air, the cows, the this, it is all composed of bliss. It is all organized by the spiritual energy. So how can we, the internal energy, how can we in this position understand that? We can't in this position. One has to come up if one wants to understand it. And it's best to come up gradually. Otherwise one will mistake it. What did Prabhupada say? When one hears the name of Radha, one thinks of Radha, the barber's wife, whose name is Radha. And Vrindavan is the place where all those pink and blue plastic bags are everywhere. But the Goswamis, and their experience of Vrindavan was quite different. How was it possible for them to give up everything unless they were tasting everything, quote everything, unless they had this incredible taste that forced them to chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant all day long, forgetting eating, forgetting sleeping, forgetting wealth, living as if mendicants, tichavat, insignificant. Giving up sleeping, everything. But not forced renunciation. It's like sometimes, you know, we're forced to give up something and all the time we're just thinking about it. Only if I had that again. Only if I could do that, if I could do that. But this is something different. When one has this taste, this was the point that was being made a little earlier. If one has this taste, there's nothing that can satisfy one of the material world. So the whole process is to gain that. By Mahaprabhu's mercy, the kirtan, the chanting of Krishna's name, somehow a drop comes through that. It gives some nourishment to the soul that allows us to go onward. So much studying to be done. Studying. So much. Unlimited studying to be done. Of Shastra. Unlimited. You start with the Bhagavad Gita and then the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. That will, not just casually reading it, but studying it, or to speak of the all the commentaries. What does it do? To discriminate. That's described in the third canto, the functions of the intelligence. I can't remember exactly, but it's discrimination basically. In the anuman, inference. To infer things. But that ability is not sufficient in and of itself to reveal this aspect of the Absolute Truth. It's more or less can get one to the Brahman platform through the intelligence, through negation. It's not anything of this world. It's not this. It's not that. We better stop because it's late. Does that answer? Oh, yes. No. What Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami specifically says that you, if you want to use your powers of discrimination, you should apply them to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand the uniqueness of his special gift that he's giving of this Braja Bhakti. That's specifically what he's saying. There's so much intellectual work. I mean, with Prabhupada, when he got two scientists to join, and what did he call them? What spiritual names did he give them? Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy. He gave them the most intimate names of the most intimate associates of Mahaprabhu so that they could use their intelligence to crush the atheistical atheistical foundation of material civilization, so-called civilization. So there's so much use of intelligence, just how to spread the preaching. Also a way to use intelligence, practical intelligence. No, we fall short. Yes, it's true. Okay, so what? We can chant Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.